was more silent than it had ever been, she thought.
The beam of the flashlight bounced off the walls, illuminating chipped stone and, as they made their way deeper underground, polished white and yellow bone. Livy had been right. The architecture of the silent city was the same here. Julian walked alongside Emma, reminding her of the last time they'd been to this place together, at their parapetai ceremony.
The city had smelled old then, like bones and dust and stone, but it had been a living and inhabited place. Now it smelled of stale air, disuse, and death. It was not her city of bones, of course, but she had been taught from childhood that all cities were one city. There were different entrances, but only one stronghold. As they passed through the arched rooms of mausoleums, Emma could not help but think, never will more warriors be added to this army. Never will more ashes help to build the city of bones. They ducked through a tunnel that opened into a square pavilion. Spires of carved bone occupied each corner. Squares of marble like a checkerboard, bronze and red, made up the floor. In the center was a mosaic that gave the room its name, a parabolic design of silver stars. A black basalt table ran along one wall. Laid out atop it were two objects, a cup and a sword. The cup was gold with a ruby-studded rim. The sword was a heavy, dark silver with a hilt in the shape of angel wings. Emma knew them both. Every shadow hunter did, from 1,000 paintings and tapestries and illustrations and history books. She noticed with a strange, detached surprise that neither the cup nor the sword had gathered any dust. Cameron inhaled sharply. I never thought I'd actually see them again. Not after the war.
Give me a flashlight, Diana said, reaching out her hand to Emma.
Go on, you two. Emma handed over the light, and she and Julian approached the table. Julian picked up the cup and tucked it through the strap of the Sam Brown belt across his chest, then zipped his jacket up over it. It took Emma a moment longer to steel herself to pick up the sword. Her last sight of it had been in Annabelle's hand, as Annabelle had cut down Robert Lightwood and plunged the shards of the sword into Livy's chest. But this was another sword, unbloodied. Unbroken. She took hold of the grip and switched it with the long sword on her back. The mortal sword was a heavy weight against her spine, and she remembered what the queen had said, that the Nephilim had once been giants on the earth, with the strength of 1,000 men.
We'd better go, Diana said. Like the warlock said, better not to leave this place open too long.
Cameron looked around with a shiver of distaste.
Can't get out of here too soon for me.
As they passed through the city, the beam of the flashlight danced off the semi-precious stones embedded in the archways of bone. They gleamed in a way that made Emma sad. What was the point of beauty nobody saw? They reached a tunnel, and she realized with relief that they must be getting close to the stairs and the surface. She could hear the wind, the sound of a car backfiring. She stiffened. Nobody drives in the fog.
What's that noise? She said. They all jerked to attention. The sound came again, and this time Cameron paled. Gunshots, Diana said, sliding a gun out of the holster on her hip. Livy! Cameron began to run. He'd gone a few feet when figures loomed up out of the shadows, figures of smoke and scarlet. A silver blade slashed out of the darkness.
Endarkened! Julian shouted.
Emma's longsword was already in her left hand. She raced forward, seizing a bow shuriken out of her belt and hurling it toward one of the figures in red. They staggered back, a spray of blood painting the wall behind them. An endarkened woman with long brown hair lunged toward her. Cameron was struggling with one at the foot of a set of stairs. A shot rang out, echoing in Emma's ears. The endarkened fell like a rock. Emma glanced back to see Julian lowering a pistol, his expression stony. Smoke still curled from the muzzle.
Go!
Diana dropped the flashlight, shoved Emma from behind, and took aim.
Get to Livy! Get to the others!
The implication was clear. get the cup and sword away from the Andarkand. Emma took off, long sword in hand, laying about her in double arcs of slashing blows. She saw Cameron struggling with an Andarkand she recognized as Dane Larkspear. Rotten in one world, rotten in another, she thought, as Cameron kicked Dane's legs out from under him. There were more Andarkand coming, though, from one of the other tunnels. She heard Julian shout, and then they were rocketing up the stairs, Emma with her sword and Julian with his gun. They burst out of the entrance to the Silent City and into the middle of a horrible tableau. Fog was still curling everywhere, white strands like the web of an enormous spider. But Emma could see what she needed to see. Dozens of Libby's rebels knelt in silence, hands behind their heads. Behind them stood long rows of Andarkand armed with bayonets and machine guns. Tessa was still slumped against the pillar of the archway, but it was Raphael holding her now, and with surprising care. Libby was on her feet in the center of the group of Andarkand and rebels. She was on her feet because Julian, a taller, older, bigger Julian with a bleak, deadly grin dressed all in red, was standing behind her, one arm lashed around her throat. His free hand held a pistol to her temple. Behind him stood Sebastian, in another expensive dark suit, and with Sebastian, flanking him, were Jace and Ash. Ash was weaponless, but Jace carried a sword that Emma recognized, Hios Foros, which in her world had been Clary's. It was a beautiful sword, its crossguard gold and obsidian, the dark silver blade stamped with black stars. Everything seemed to slow to a crawl. Emma heard Julian's breath rattle in his throat. He stopped dead, as if he had been turned to stone.
Julian Blackthorn, Sebastian said, and the white mist curling around him was the color of his hair, of Ash's hair, two winter princes. Did you really think I'd be fooled by your poor performance in the nightclub?
Annabelle, Julian said, his voice hoarse, and Emma knew what he was thinking. Annabelle must have betrayed them. Annabelle, who knew who they really were.
Sebastian's brow furrowed. What about Annabelle?
Ash shook his head slightly. It was a tiny movement, a minuscule negation, but Emma saw it, and she was fairly sure Julian had seen it too. No, he was saying. Annabelle didn't betray you. But why would Ash?
Drop your gun. Sebastian said, and Julian did, tossing it into the fog.
Sebastian had barely looked at Emma. Now he turned his lazy, contemptuous gaze in her direction.
And you, drop that cheap sword.
Emma dropped the long sword with a clang. Had he not seen the mortal sword strapped across her back?
You have the sun in your skin, Sebastian said. That alone would have told me you weren't from Thule. And thanks to Ash, I know the story of your world. I knew of the portal. I've been wondering all this time if one of you would stumble through it. I knew you'd go straight for the mortal instruments to hide them from me. All I had to do was post some guards here and wait for the tip-off.
He grinned like a jaguar.
Now, hand over the mortal instruments, or Julian here will blow your sister's head off.
The real Julian looked at Livy. Emma was screaming inside. He can't watch her die again. Not again. Nobody could live through that twice.
Livy's gaze was steady on her brother's. There was no fear in her expression. You won't let her live, Julian said. No matter what I do, you'll kill her.
Sebastian grinned a little wider. You'll have to wait and see.
All right, Julian said. His shoulders slumped. I'm reaching for the cup, he said, holding up one hand as the other unzipped his jacket.
Emma watched him in dismay as he reached inside.
I'm going to hold it out to you.
He drew his hand out from his jacket. He was holding a throwing knife, small and sharp with red stones in the hilt. Emma barely had time to recognize it before he had flung it. It whipped through the air, grazing Livy's cheek and sinking deeply into the eye of the Andarkand Julian who held her. He didn't even scream. He fell back, hitting the pavement with a thud, his pistol rolling out of his open hand. Sebastian shouted, but Livy was already gone, ducking and rolling into the mist. Emma drew the mortal sword and charged directly at Sebastian. The world exploded into chaos. Sebastian yelled for his Indarkand and they came running, abandoning the rebels to throw themselves between Emma and their leader. Jace lunged at Emma, pushing Ash behind him, but Julian was already there. He had caught up the fallen longsword, and it clanged hard against Heos Phoros as he drove Jace back, away from Emma. Emma slashed out at the nearest Indarkand with the mortal sword. Its heaviness had turned to light in her grip. It sang as she wielded it, as only Cortana had sung in her hand before, and suddenly she remembered its name. Malartok. An Indarkand with close-cropped blonde hair aimed a pistol at her. The bullet clanged off the blade of Malartok. The Indarkand gaped at her, and Emma drove the mortal sword into his chest, flinging him backward with such force that he took another Indarkand down with him as he fell. She heard someone cry out. It was Livy, leaping into the fray. She ducked, rolled, and shot, taking out an Indarkand who was charging at Bat. The sounds of the battle echoed like dull thunder off the walls of mist that curled and slid around them. Malartok was a silver blur in Emma's hand, turning away blades and bullets as she inched closer to Sebastian. She saw Bat move toward Ash, bayonet in hand. Ash wasn't moving. He was standing, watching the chaos like an onlooker at the theater. "Put your hands behind your back," Bat said, and Ash glanced over at him with a frown, as if he were a rude guest who had interrupted a play. Bat raised the bayonet. "Look, kid, you'd better..." Ash fixed Bat with a steady green gaze.
"You don't want to do that," he said.
Bat froze, gripping his weapon.
Ash turned and walked away, not hurrying, almost sauntering, really, and vanished into the fog.
"Bat, look out!"
Maya shouted, and Bat spun to plunge his bayonet into the body of an advancing and darkened warrior. And then came the scream, a howl of agony so shrill and intense it pierced the fog. A woman in Indarkand gear flew across the square, her hair unfurling behind her like a banner spun out of gold, and threw herself across the dead body of this world's Julian Blackthorn. Emma knew it was herself, the herself of Thule, clutching at the body of her dead partner, sobbing against his chest, her fingers clawing his blood-wet clothes. She screamed over and over, each a sharp, short howl, like a car alarm going off on an empty street. Emma couldn't help staring, and Julian, her own Julian, jerked in surprise and spun to look, recognizing the sound of Emma's voice, she guessed. The split-second break in his attention left an opening for Jace, who lunged forward with Heos Phoros. Julian, twisting to his side, just barely avoided the blade, but stumbled. Jace swept his feet out from under him as he went down.
"No!"
Emma spun around, reversing course. But if Jace brought the sword down, there was no way she'd get there in time. A plume of yellow flame shot between Jace and Julian. Julian scrambled back as Jace turned to stare. Raphael was holding Tessa upright. Her hand was stretched out, yellow fire still dancing at her fingertips. She looked frayed and exhausted, but her eyes were dark with sorrow as they fixed on Jace. It was an odd, frozen moment, the kind that sometimes happened in the midst of battle. It was broken by a figure stumbling from the entrance to the Silent City. Diana, blood-stained and panting, but alive. Emma's heart leapt with relief. Sebastian's eyes narrowed.
"Go into the city," he shouted. "Find everything. Spellbooks, records, bring it all to me."
Tessa gasped. No, the destruction he would wreak. Jace immediately turned away from Julian, as if he'd forgotten he was there.
"Indarkand," he called. His voice was deep and flat, without tone or emotion.
"Come to me."
Emma turned to run toward the city entrance. She could hear Sebastian laughing. Julian had sprung to his feet and was behind her. Livy spun, kicked at an Indarkand, and ran toward Tessa and the others.
"Shut the doors! Shut the doors!"
"No!"
Diana looked wildly around the scene of carnage.
"Cameron's still in there."
Julian turned toward Tessa.
What can we do?
I can shut the doors, but you must understand that I cannot open them again, Tessa said. Cameron will be trapped.
A look of agony passed over Livy's face.
Jace and the other in Darkened were moving toward them. There were seconds to spare.
The agony didn't leave Livy's eyes, but her jaw hardened. In that moment, she had never looked more like Julian.
Close the doors, she said.
Stop the warlock, Sebastian cried. Stop her!
He broke off with a howl. Maya, behind him, had plunged a sword into his side. The blade drove into him, smeared with blackish blood. He barely seemed to notice.
Tessa,
Emma began. And she didn't know what she planned to say, whether she planned to ask Tessa if she had the strength to close the doors, whether she intended to tell her to do it or not to do it. Tessa moved before she could finish her sentence, raising her slender arms, murmuring words Emma would always try to remember and always find sliding out of her mind. Golden sparks flew from Tessa's fingers, illuminating the archway. The doors began to slide closed, grinding and rattling.
Sebastian yelled with rage and grabbed the sword protruding from his chest. He yanked it free and flung it at Maya, who threw herself to the ground to avoid being struck.
Stop!
He shouted, striding toward the entrance to the city.
Stop now!
The doors slammed shut with an echo that reverberated through the fog. Emma looked at Tessa, who gave her a sweet, sad smile. Blood was running from the corners of Tessa's mouth, from her split fingernails.
No, said Raphael. He had been so quiet, Emma had almost forgotten he was there.
Tessa! Tessa Gray burst into flame. It was not as if she had caught fire, not really. In between one moment and the next, she became fire, became a glowing pillar of conflagration. The burning light was white and gold. It cut through the mist, illuminating the world. Raphael fell back, his arm across his face to shield himself from the light. In the brilliance, Emma could see sharp details. The cut across Livy's face where Julian's blade had grazed her. The tears in Diana's eyes. The rage on Sebastian's face as he stared at the shut doors. The fear of the Indarkened as they cringed away from the light.
Cowards! The light cannot harm you!
Sebastian shouted.
Fight on!
We have to get back to the Bradbury. Libby said desperately. We have to get out of here.
Livy, Julian said. We can't lead them back to your headquarters. We have to deal with them now.
And there's only one way to do that, Emma said. She tightened her grip on the mortal sword and started toward Sebastian.
She was burning with a new fury, filling her, sustaining her. Cameron, Tessa. She thought of Livy, having lost someone else she loved. And she launched herself at Sebastian. A mortal sword curving through the air like a whip made of fire and gold. Sebastian growled. Phosphoros leapt into his hand and he strode toward Emma. Fury seemed to dance around him like sparks.
You think you can strike me down with a mortal sword? He said. Isabel Lightwood tried that, and now she molders in a grave in Idris. What if I cut your head off? Emma taunted. Do you keep on being the dickweed ruler of this planet in two different pieces?
Sebastian spun, the Morgenstern sword a black and silver blur. Emma leapt, the sword slashing under her feet. She landed on a toppled fire hydrant.
Go ahead and try, Sebastian said in a bored voice. Others have. I cannot be killed. I will tire you out, girl, and cut you into puzzle pieces to amuse the demons.
The clash of battle was all around them. Tessa's fire was dimming, and in the clamor of the mist, Emma could just see Julian battling Jace. Julian had taken one of the Indarkened swords and was fighting defensively, as Diana had taught him when their opponent was stronger than they were. Livy was fighting Indarkened with a new anger and energy. So was Raphael. As Emma flicked her glance toward the others, she saw Raphael seize a red-haired Indarkened woman and tear her throat out with his teeth. And then she saw it. A glow in the distance. A whirling, spinning illumination she knew well. The light of a portal. Emma leapt down off the fire hydrant and pressed her attack. Sebastian actually fell back for a moment in surprise before he recovered and struck back even harder. The blade hummed in Emma's hand as her heart beat out two words. Distract him. Distract him. Phosphorus slammed against Malartok. Sebastian bared his teeth in a grin that was nothing like a real grin. Emma wondered if he'd once been able to fake a human smile and forgotten how. She thought of the way Clary spoke of him, of someone who had been lost long before he died. A sharp pain cut through her. Sebastian's sword had scored the front of her left thigh. Blood stained the rip in her canvas pants. He grinned again and kicked her wound, violently. The pain whited out her vision and she felt herself tilt. She hit the ground with a crack that she was fairly sure was her collarbone snapping.
"You begin to bore me," Sebastian said, prowling above her like a cat.
Her vision was blurry with pain, but she could see the portal light growing stronger. The air seemed to shimmer. In the distance, she could still hear the other Emma sobbing.
"Other worlds," he mused. "Why should I care about some other world when I rule this one? What should some other world mean to me?"
"Do you want to know how you died there?" Emma said. The pain of her broken bone seared through her. She could hear battle all around her, hear Julian and Jace fighting. She fought to keep from fainting. The longer she distracted Sebastian, the better. "You want to live forever in this world," she said. "Don't you want to know how you died in our world? Maybe it could happen here, too. Ash wouldn't know about it, neither would Annabelle. But I do." He lowered Phosphorus and let the tip of it nick her collarbone. Emma almost screamed from the pain.
"Tell me."
"Clary killed you," Emma said, and saw his eyes fly wide open. "With heavenly fire. It burned out everything evil in you, and there wasn't enough left to live for long. But you died in your mother's arms, and your sister cried over you. In the club yesterday, you talked about the weight on you, crushing you. In our world, your last words were, 'I've never felt so light.'" His face twisted. For a moment, there was fear there, in his eyes, and more than fear, regret, perhaps, even pain. "You lie," he hissed, sliding the tip of his sword down to her sternum, where a stabbing blow would sever her abdominal aorta. She would bleed out in agony. "Tell me it isn't the truth. Tell me!" His hand tightened on the blade. There was a blur behind him, a flurry of wings, and something struck him hard, a blow to the shoulder that made him stagger sideways. Emma saw Sebastian whirl around, a look of fury on his face.
"Ash, what are you doing?"
Emma's mouth dropped open in surprise. It was Ash, and from his back extended a pair of wings. For Emma, who had been raised all her life on images of Raziel, it was like a blow. She pushed herself up on her elbows, staring. They were angel's wings, and yet they weren't. They were black, tipped with silver. They shimmered like the night sky. She guessed they were wider than the span of his outstretched arms. They were beautiful. The most beautiful thing she had seen in Thule. "No," Ash said calmly, looking at his father, and plucked the sword from Sebastian's hand. He stepped back and Emma rolled to her feet, her collarbone screaming in pain, and thrust the mortal sword into Sebastian's chest. She yanked it free, feeling the blade scrape against the bone of his ribcage, preparing to thrust again, to cut him to pieces. As she drew the sword back, he shuddered. He hadn't made a sound when she stabbed him. Now his mouth opened, and black blood cascaded over his lower lip and chin as his eyes rolled back. Emma could hear the Andarkand screaming. His skin began to split and burn. He threw his head back in a silent scream and burst apart into ashes, the way demons vanished in Emma's world. The screaming of Thule Emma cut off abruptly. She sprawled, lifeless, over her Julian's body. One by one, the other Andarkand began to fall, crumpling at the feet of the rebels they were fighting. Jace gave a cry and fell to his knees. Behind him, Emma could see the illumination of the portal, open now and blazing with blue light. "Jace," she whispered and moved to go toward him. Ash stepped in front of her. "I wouldn't," he said. He spoke in that same eerily calm voice in which he'd said to his father, "No." "He's been under Sebastian's control too long. He isn't what you think. He can't go back." She swung her sword up to point at Ash, close to nausea from the pain of her broken collarbone. Ash looked back at her, unflinching. "Why would you do that?" she demanded. "Betray Sebastian. Why?"
"He was going to kill me," Ash said. He had a low voice, slightly husky, not the boy's voice he'd had in the Unseelie court. "Besides, I liked your speech about Clary. It was interesting."
Julian had turned away from Jace, who still knelt on the ground, staring at the sword in his hands. Julian moved toward Emma as Livy stared. She was slashed with wounds but still standing, and her rebels were approaching to circle around her. They wore expressions of shock and disbelief. A scream cut through the eerie silence of dead and darkened and stunned warriors, a scream that Emma knew well.
"Don't hurt him!"
Annabelle cried. She raced towards Ash, her hands outstretched. She wore her red gown, and her feet were bare as she ran. She seized hold of Ash's arm and began to drag him toward the portal. Emma broke from her frozen state and began to run toward Julian as he moved to stand in front of the portal. His sword flashed out as he raised it, just as Ash pulled hard against Annabelle's grip. He was shouting at her that he didn't want to go, not without Jace. Annabelle was strong. Emma knew how strong. But it appeared that Ash was stronger. He yanked free of her grip and began to run toward Jace. The light of the portal had begun to dim. Was Annabelle closing it, or was it dying on its own, naturally? Either way, Emma's heart kicked into high gear, slamming against her ribcage. She leapt over the body of an Undarkened and came down on the other side just as Annabelle whirled on her.
"Stay back!"
Annabelle shouted.
"Neither of you can enter the portal, not without Ash!"
Ash turned to look at the sound of his name. He was kneeling beside Jace, his hand on Jace's shoulder. Ash's face was twisted with what looked like grief. Annabelle began to advance on Emma. Her face was frighteningly blank, the way it had been that day on the dais, the day she'd thrust the mortal sword into Livy's heart and stopped it forever. Behind Annabelle, Julian lifted his free hand. Emma knew immediately what he meant, what he wanted. She raised the mortal sword, gritting her teeth in pain, and threw it. It flashed past Annabelle. Julian cast his own sword aside and caught it out of the air. He swung his still bloodied blade in a curving arc, slicing through Annabelle's spine. Annabelle gave a terrible, inhuman shriek, like the shriek of a fisher cat. She spun like a malfunctioning top, and Julian rammed the mortal sword into her chest, just as she'd done to Livy. He pulled the blade free, her blood dripping over his clenched fist, spattering his skin. He stood like a statue, gripping the mortal sword as Annabelle collapsed to the ground like a marionette with its strings cut. She lay on her back, her face upturned, a pool of scarlet beginning to spread around her, mixing with the torn frills of a red dress. Her hands, knotted into claws at her sides, relaxed in death. Her bare feet were dark scarlet, as if she were wearing slippers made of blood. Julian looked down at her body. Her eyes, still blackthorn blue, were already beginning to film over. "Queen of air and darkness," he said in a low voice, "I will never be like Malcolm." Emma took a long, ragged breath as Julian handed her back the mortal sword. Then he tore the bloodied rag from his wrist and cast it down beside Annabelle's body. Her blood began to soak into it, mixing with Libby's. Before Emma could speak, she heard Ash cry out. Whether it was a cry of pain or triumph, she couldn't tell. He was still kneeling beside Jace. Julian held out his hand.
"Ash," he cried, "come with us. I swear, we'll take care of you."
Ash looked at him for a long moment with steady, unreadable green eyes. Then he shook his head. His wings beat darkly against the air. Catching hold of Jace, he sailed upward, both of them vanishing into the cloudy sky. Julian lowered his hand, his face troubled, but Livy was already running toward him, her face white with distress.
Jules? Emma? The portal!
Emma swung around. The portal had dimmed even further, its light wavering. Livy reached Julian and he swung an arm around her, hugging her tight against his side.
We have to go, he said. The portal's fading. It'll only hang on for a few minutes now Annabelle's gone.
Livy pressed her face into Julian's shoulder and for a moment hugged him incredibly tight. When she let go, her face was shining with tears.
Go, she whispered. Come with us, Julian said.
No, Julian. You know I can't, Livy said. My people finally have a chance. You gave us a chance. I'm grateful, but I can't have Cameron die for the safety of a world I'm willing to run away from.
Emma was afraid Julian would protest. He didn't. Maybe he'd been more prepared for this than she'd thought. He reached into his jacket and pulled out the cup. It gleamed dull gold in the portal light, the blue light of a sky with a real sun.
Take this, he pressed it into Livy's hands. With it, perhaps the Nephilim can be reborn here.
Livy cradled it in her fingers.
I may never be able to use this. But you might, Emma said. Take it.
And let me give you one last thing, Julian said. He bent and whispered in Livy's ear. Her eyes went wide.
Go!
Someone shouted. It was Raphael, who along with Diana, Bat, and Maya was watching them.
You stupid humans! Go before it's too late!
Julian and Livy looked at each other one last time. When he turned away, Emma thought she could hear the sound of his heart tearing itself apart. One piece would always be here in Thule with Livy.
Go!
Raphael shouted again. The portal had narrowed to a gap smaller than a doorway.
And tell Magnus and Alec to rename their child.
Emma slid her hand into Julian's. Her other hand gripped the mortal sword. Julian looked down at her. In the sunlight of the portal, his eyes were sea blue.
See you on the other side, he whispered. And together, they stepped through.
Chapter 22. The Worst and the Best. The silent city was empty, full of the echoes of past dreams and whispers. The torches in the walls were lit, casting a golden glow over the spires of bone and mausoleums of rhodolite and white agate. Emma walked unhurried among the bones of the dead. She knew she should be anxious, perhaps hurrying, but she couldn't remember why or what she was seeking. She knew she was wearing gear, battle gear, black and silver as a starry sky. Her boots echoing on the marble were the only sound in the city. She passed through a familiar room with a high, domed ceiling. Marble of all colors flowed together in patterns too intricate for the eye to follow. On the floor were two interlocking circles. This was where she and Julian had become parabatai. Beyond that room was the star chamber. The parabolic stars glimmered on the floor. The mortal sword hung point down behind the basalt judge's bar, as if waiting for her. She took hold of it and found it feather light. Crossing the room, she stepped into the square of speaking stars.
Emma? Emma, it's me. Christina?
A cool hand was holding hers. She was tossing and turning. There was a searing pain in her throat.
Christina, she whispered, her lips dry and cracked. Hide the sword. Please. Please hide it.
There was a click. The floor beneath her opened along an invisible seam. Two slabs of marble rolling smoothly apart. Revealed beneath them was a square compartment containing a stone tablet, on which was painted a crude parabatai rune. It was neither fine work nor beautiful, but it radiated power. Gripping the hilt of Malartok, Emma brought it down, point first. The blade split the tablet apart, and Emma staggered back in a cloud of dust and power.
It is severed, she thought. The bond is severed.
She felt no joy and no relief, only fear as a whispering voice called her name.
Emma. Emma, how could you?
She turned to see Jem in his silent brother robes. A red stain was spreading slowly across his chest. She cried out as he fell.
Emma, talk to me. You're going to be all right. Julian's going to be all right.
Christina sounded on the verge of tears. Emma knew she was in a bed, but it felt as if huge manacles had chained down her arms and legs. They were so heavy. Voices rose and fell around her. She recognized Mark's voice and Helen's.
What happened to them?
Helen said.
They appeared just a few moments after you, but in totally different clothing. I don't understand.
Neither do I.
Mark sounded wretched. Emma felt his hand brush her hair.
Emma, where have you been?
Emma stood before the silver mirror. She saw herself reflected back. Pale hair, ruined skin, all familiar. But her eyes were the dull red of the moon in Thule. Then she was falling. Falling through water. She saw the great monsters of the deep, shark-finned and serpentine-toothed. And then she saw Ash rising up through the water with his black wings gleaming silver and gold, and the monsters fell back from him in fear. She woke with a hoarse cry, struggling against the seaweed that dragged her down into deeper water. She realized she was struggling against sheets that were wound around her and sagged back, gasping for breath. Hands were on her shoulders, then brushing back her hair, a soft voice was saying her name.
Emma,
Christina said.
Emma, it's all right. You've been dreaming.
Emma opened her eyes. She was in her room in the Institute. Blue paint, familiar mural on the wall of swallows in flight over castle towers, sunlight spilling through an open window. She could hear the sounds of the sea, of music playing in another room.
Christina,
Emma whispered.
I'm so glad it's you.
Christina made a hiccuping noise and threw her arms around Emma, hugging her tightly.
I'm so sorry,
she said.
I'm so sorry we left Ferry without you. It's all I've been able to think about. I should never, never have left you.
As if from a great distance, Emma remembered the Unseelie Court. How the flames had cut them off from Christina and the others. How she had nodded at her, giving her permission to save herself, the others.
Tina,
she exclaimed, patting her friend on the back. Her voice was hoarse, her throat oddly sore.
It's all right. I told you to go.
Christina sat back, her nose and eyes pink.
But where did you go? And why do you keep calling me the Rose of Mexico?
She wrinkled up her forehead in puzzlement. Emma made a noise that was half laugh, half gasp.
I have a lot to tell you, she said.
But first I just have to know.
She caught Christina's hand.
Is everyone alive? Julian, all the others?
Of course. Christina looked horrified.
Everyone's alive. Everyone.
Emma squeezed Christina's hand and let go.
What has the blight done to Magnus? Are we too late?
It's odd that you should ask. Alec and Magnus arrived here yesterday.
Christina hesitated.
Magnus isn't doing well at all. He's very ill. We've been in contact with a spiral labyrinth.
But they still think it's the ley lines.
Emma started to swing her legs out of the bed. A wave of dizziness swamped her, and she braced herself against the pillows, breathing hard.
No, no, they don't. I realized it was the blight and fairy.
Emma, don't try to get up.
What about Diana? Emma demanded. She was in Idris.
She isn't anymore.
Christina looked grim.
That's another long story. But she's fine.
Emma!
The door burst open and Helen flew in, all disarrayed, fair hair and anxious eyes. She flew to hug Emma, and Emma felt another wave of dizziness go over her. She thought of Thule and how Helen had been separated from her family forever there. She would never forgive the Clave for exiling Helen to Wrangell Island, but at least she was back. At least this was a world where it was possible to be lost and then return. Helen hugged Emma until she waved her arms to indicate she needed oxygen. Christina fussed as Emma once again tried to get up and succeeded in propping herself against the pillows, just as Aline, Drew, Tavi, Jace, and Clary crowded in.
Emma!
Tavi exclaimed, having no time for sick room protocols, and jumped up onto the bed. Emma hugged him gently and ruffled his hair while the others gathered around. She heard Jace ask Christina if Emma had been talking and whether she seemed coherent.
You shaved, she said, pointing at him. It's a big improvement.
There was a scrum of hugging and exclaiming. Clary came last and smiled down at Emma the same way she'd once smiled at her outside the council hall, the first time I'd ever met, when Clary had helped dispel the fears of a terrified child.
I knew you'd be all right,
Clary said, her voice pitched so low only Emma could hear her. There was a knock on the door, which barely opened into the crowded room. Emma felt a flare like a match tip against her left arm and realized with a shock of joy what it was, just as Julian stepped into the room, leaning on Mark's shoulder.
Her parabatai rune. It felt like forever since it had sparked with life.
Her eyes met Julian's, and for a moment she was unaware of anything else, just that Julian was there, that he was all right, that there were bandages on his left arm and visible under his t-shirt, but it didn't matter. He was alive.
He just woke up about an hour ago, Mark said as the others beamed at Julian. He's been asking for you, Emma.
Aline clapped her hands together.
Okay, now that we've got the hugging and stuff out of the way.
Where were you two?
She indicated Emma and Julian with an accusatory wave of her hand.
Do you know how terrified we were when Mark and Christina and the others suddenly appeared and you weren't with them? And then you suddenly popped out of nowhere, all beaten up and wearing strange clothes?
She gestured to Emma's night table where her Thule clothes lay neatly folded.
Emma began and broke off as Aline marched out of the room.
Is she mad?
Worried, Helen said diplomatically.
We all were.
Emma, you had a broken collarbone, and Julian had broken ribs. They should be better now, it's been 3 days. The exhaustion and worry of those 3 days told in the dark circles beneath her eyes.
And you were incoherent, said Jace. Julian was out cold at first, but you kept shouting about demons and black skies and a dead sun, like you'd been to Edom.
Jace's eyes were narrowed. He wasn't far off, Emma thought. Jace could be silly when he felt like it, but he was smart.
Aline stomped back into the room. She had quite a stomp for a woman who was built along delicate lines.
Also, what is this?
She demanded, holding up the mortal sword.
Tavi made a delighted noise.
I know that one. It's the mortal sword.
No, the mortal sword is broken, Drew said. That's got to be something else, she frowned.
What is it, Jules?
It's the mortal sword, Julian said. But we have to keep its existence here an absolute secret. Another hubbub broke out. Someone pounded on the door. It turned out Kit and Ty were in the corridor. They'd been downstairs with Kieran, Alec, and Magnus, and had just found out Emma was awake. Christina scolded everyone in Spanish for making noise, and Jace wanted to hold the mortal sword, and Julian indicated to Mark that he could stand on his own, and Aline stuck her head into the hallway to say something to Ty and Kit, and Emma looked at Julian, who was looking directly back at her.
All right, stop,
Emma said, throwing her hands up. Give me and Julian a second alone to talk, then we'll tell you everything, she frowned. But not in my bedroom. It's crowded and giving me privacy issues.
The library, Clary said. I'll help set it up and get you some food. You must be starving, even though we gave you a few of these.
She tapped a nourishment rune on Emma's arm.
Okay, come on, clear the room.
Give Ty a hug for me.
Emma said to Tavi as he hopped down. He looked dubious about the transference of hugs, but filed out with everyone else. And then the room was quiet and empty except for Emma and Julian. She slid out of bed, and this time she managed to stand without dizziness. She felt a slight twinge of a rune and thought,
it's because Julian's here. I'm drawing strength from him.
Do you feel it? She said, touching her left bicep.
The parabatai rune?
I don't feel much, he said, and Emma's heart sank. She'd known it, really, from the moment he'd walked in,
but she hadn't realized how much hope she still had hanging on the idea that somehow the spell might have been broken.
Turn around, she said dully. I have to get dressed.
Julian raised his eyebrows. I have seen it all before, you know.
Which does not entitle you to further viewing privileges, said Emma. Turn around.
Julian turned around. Emma fished into her closet for the least Thule-esque clothes she had and eventually fished out a flowered dress and vintage sandals. She changed, watching Julian as he watched the wall.
So, just to be clear, the spell is back, she said once the dress was on.
Quietly, she picked up the vest she'd worn in Thule, took Livy's letter, and transferred it to the pocket of her dress. Yes, he said, and she felt the word like a needle in her heart. I had some dreams, dreams with emotions in them, but by the time I woke up, they faded. I know that I felt, even how I felt, but I can't feel it. It's like knowing I had a wound, but I can't remember what the pain was like. Emma kicked her feet into her sandals and twisted her hair up into a knot. She suspected she probably looked pallid and horrible, but did it matter? Julian was the only person she wanted to impress, and he didn't care.
Turn around, she said, and he turned.
He looked grimmer than she would have thought, as if the spell, being unbroken, was bitter to him, too.
So, what are you going to do?
Come here, he said. And she came close to him with a little reluctance as he began to unwind the bandages on his arm. It was hard not to remember the way he'd spoken to her in Thule, the way he'd placed each bit of himself, his hope and yearning and desire and fear, in her hands. I'm not myself without you, Emma. Once you dissolve dye in water, you can't take it back out. It's like that. I can't take you out of me. That means cutting out my heart, and I don't like myself without my heart. The bandages came free, and he extended his forearm to her. She sucked in her breath.
Who did this? She demanded.
I did, he said, before we left Thule. Across the skin of his inner arm, he had cut words. Words that had healed now into black-red scars. You are in the cage. Do you know what this means, he said, why I did this?
Her heart felt like it was breaking into 1,000 pieces. I do, she said. Do you?
Someone knocked on the door. Julian jumped back and began hurriedly rewrapping his arm.
What's up? Emma called. We're almost ready. I just wanted to tell you to come down, Mark said. We're all eager to hear your story, and I've made my famous donut sandwiches.
I'm not sure Tavi likes them is exactly what most people mean when they say famous, Emma said. Julian, her Julian, would have laughed. This Julian just said, we'd better go, and walked past her to the door.
At first, Christina thought Kieran's hair had turned white from shock or annoyance. It took a few minutes for her to realize it was powdered sugar. They were in the kitchen, helping Mark as he put together plates of apples and cheese and donut sandwiches. Truly horrible concoctions involving donuts cut in half and filled with peanut butter, honey, and jelly. Kieran liked the honey, though. He licked some off his fingers and started to peel an apple with a small, sharp knife.
Wakala, Christina laughed.
Gross. Wash your hands after you lick them.
We never wash our hands in the hunt, said Kieran, sucking honey from his finger in a way that made Christina's stomach feel fluttery.
That's true, we didn't, Mark agreed, slicing a donut in half and sending up another cloud of powdered sugar.
That's because you lived like savages, said Christina.
Go wash your hands.
She steered Kieran to the sink, whose taps still confused him, and went over to dust sugar off the back of Mark's shirt. He turned a smile at her, and her stomach flipped again. Feeling very odd, she left Mark and went back to cutting cheese into small cubes, as Kieran and Mark squabbled fondly about whether or not it was disgusting to eat sugar directly out of the box. There was something about being with both of them that was sweetly, calmly domestic, in a way she hadn't felt since she'd left home. Which was odd, because there was nothing ordinary at all about either Mark or Kieran,
and nothing normal about how she felt about the two of them. She had, in fact, hardly seen either of them since they'd returned from Ferry. She'd spent her time in Emma's room, worried that Emma would wake up and she wouldn't be there. She'd slept on a mattress next to the bed, though she hadn't slept all that much. Emma had tossed restlessly night and day and called out over and over for Livy, for Drew and Ty and Mark, for her parents, and most often for Julian. There was another reason Christina wanted to be in the room with Emma, one that she had not admitted to anyone. In her incoherent state, Emma was calling out to Julian that she loved him, for him to come and hold her. Any of those statements might be written off as the love felt between Parabatai, but then again, they might not be. As a keeper of Emma and Julian's secret, Christina felt she owed it to them both to protect Emma's unconscious confidences. She knew Mark felt the same. He'd been with Julian, though he reported that Julian cried out much less. It was one of the few things Mark had said to her since they'd gotten back from Ferry. She'd been avoiding both Mark and Kieran, deliberately. Diego and Jaime were in prison, the consul was under house arrest, the Dearborns were still in power, and Emma and Julian were unconscious. She was far too frayed to deal with her mess of a love life at the moment. She hadn't realized till this moment quite how much she'd missed them.
Hello?
It was Tavi, bouncing into the kitchen. He'd been subdued the last few days while Julian had been sick, but he'd recovered with the admirable elasticity of children.
I'm supposed to carry the sandwiches, he added with the air of someone who had been given a task of great importance.
Mark gave him a plate of the donuts and another to Kieran, who shepherded Tavi out of the room in the manner of one growing used to being surrounded by a large family.
I wish I had a camera, Christina said after they left.
A photograph of a haughty prince of Ferry carrying a plate of terrible donut sandwiches would be quite a memento.
My sandwiches are not terrible.
Mark leaned back against the counter with an easy grace. In blue jeans and a t-shirt, he looked entirely human, if you didn't notice sharply pointed ears.
You really care about him, don't you? About Kieran?
Christina felt her pulse speed up, with nerves and the closeness to Mark. They had spoken only of surface things for days. The intimacy discussing their actual feelings was making her heart race.
Yes, I mean, you know that, don't you?
She felt herself blush.
You saw us kiss.
I did, Mark said.
I did not know what it meant to you, nor to Kieran, either.
He looked thoughtful.
It is easy to be carried away in Ferry.
I wanted to reassure you I was not angry or jealous. I am truly not, Christina.
All right, she said awkwardly. Thank you. But what did it mean that he wasn't angry or jealous? If what had happened with her and Kieran and Ferry had happened among shadow hunters, she would have considered it a declaration of interest, and would have worried that Mark was upset. But it hadn't been, had it? It might have meant nothing more to Kieran than a handshake.
She trailed a hand along the smooth top of the counter. She could not help but remember a conversation she had had with Mark once, here in the Institute. It felt so long ago. It came back to her like a lucid dream. There was nothing rehearsed about the look Mark gave her then.
I meant it when I said you were beautiful. I want you, and Kieran would not mind.
You want me?
Yes, Mark said simply, and Christina looked away, suddenly very aware of how close his body was to hers, of the shape of his shoulders under his jacket. He was lovely, as fairies were lovely, with a sort of unearthliness, as quicksilver as moonlight on water. He didn't seem quite touchable, but she had just seen him kiss Kieran and knew better.
You do not want to be wanted?
In another time, the time before, Christina would have blushed.
It's not the sort of compliment mortal women enjoy.
But why not? Said Mark.
Because it makes it sound like I'm a thing you want to use. And when you say Kieran would not mind, you make it sound like he would not mind because I do not matter.
That is very human, he said. to be jealous of a body but not a heart. You see, I do not want a body without a heart, she said. A body without a heart. She could have both Mark and Kieran now, in the way that Mark had suggested so long ago. She could kiss them and be with them and bid them goodbye when they left her. Because they would. Christina, Mark said, are you all right? You seem sad. I would have hoped to reassure you. He touched the side of her face lightly, his fingers tracing the shape of her cheekbone. I don't want to talk about this, Christina thought. They had spent 3 days speaking of nothing important save Emma and Julian. Those 3 days, and the peace of them felt delicate, as if too much discussion of reality and its harshness might shatter everything. We don't have time to talk now, she said. Perhaps later. Let me say one thing, Mark spoke quietly. I have long been torn between two worlds. I thought I was a shadow hunter, told myself I was only that. But I have realized my ties to Fairy are stronger than I thought. I cannot leave half my blood, half my heart, in either world. I dream it might be possible to have both, but I know it cannot be. Christina turned away so as not to see the look on his face. Mark would choose Fairy, she knew. Mark would choose Kieran. They had their history together, a great love in the past. They were both fairies, and though she had studied fairy and yearned toward it with all her heart, it was not the same. They would be together because they belonged together, because they were beautiful together, and there would be pain for her when she lost them both. But that was the way for mortals who love the folk of fairy. They always paid a heavy price.
It was, Emma discovered, not actually possible to hate donut sandwiches. Even if her arteries might pay for it someday down the line, she ate 3. Mark had placed them with care on platters, which sat in the middle of one of the big library tables. Something about the desire to please and the gesture touched Emma's heart. Everyone else was crowded around the long table, including Kieran, who sat quietly, his face blank, beside Mark. He wore a simple black shirt and linen pants. He looked nothing like he had the last time Emma had seen him, in the Unseelie Court, covered in blood and dirt, his face twisted with rage. Magnus looked different than he had the last time she'd seen him, too, and not in a good way. He had come down to the library, leaning heavily on Alec, his face gray and tight, sharply drawn with pain. He lay on a long couch by the table, a blanket around his shoulders. Despite the blanket and the warm weather, he shivered often. Every time he did, Alec would bend down over him and smooth his hair back or draw the blankets up more tightly over his shoulders. And every time Alec did, Jace, sitting across the table beside Clary, would tense, his hands curling into useless fists. Because that was what being parabatai meant, Emma knew. Feeling someone else's pain as if it was your own. Magnus kept his eyes closed while Emma told the story of Thule. Julian interjected quietly when she forgot a detail or glossed over something he thought was necessary. He didn't push her, though, at the harder parts, when she had to talk about how Alec and Magnus had died, or about Isabel's last stand with the mortal sword, about Clary's death at Lilith's hands. And about Jace. His eyes widened incredulously when Emma spoke of the Jace who lived in Thule, who had been bound to Sebastian for so long he would never be free. Emma saw Clary reach over to grip his hand tightly, her eyes shining with tears the way they hadn't when her own death had been described. But the worst, of course, was describing Livy. Because while the other stories were horrors, knowing about Livy and Thule reminded them that there was a horror story in this world that they could neither change nor reverse. Drew, who had insisted on sitting at the table with everyone else, said nothing when they described Livy, but tears streaked silently down her cheeks.
Mark went ashen. And Ty, who looked thinner than Emma remembered him, bitten down like a ragged fingernail, made no sound either. Kit, who was sitting beside him, tentatively put his hand over Ty's, where it lay on the table. Ty didn't react, though he didn't draw away from Kit either. Emma went on, because she had no choice but to go on. Her throat was aching badly by the time she finished. Gray-faced, Christina pushed a glass of water toward her, and she took it gratefully. A silence had fallen. No one seemed to know what to say. The only sound was the faint tinny chime of the music coming from Tavi's headphones as he played with a train set in the corner. They were Ty's headphones, really, but he put them gently on Tavi's head before Emma had started talking. "Poor Ash," Clary said. She was very pale. "He was my nephew. I mean, my brother was a monster, but..." "Ash saved me," Emma said. "He saved my life. And he said it was because he liked something I said about you. But he stayed because he wanted to stay in Thule. We offered to bring him back. He didn't want to come." Clary smiled tightly, her eyes sparkling with tears. "Thank you."
"Okay, let's talk about the important part." Magnus turned to Alec with a furious look on his face. "You killed yourself. Why would you do that?"
Alec looked startled. "That wasn't me," he pointed out. "It's an alternate universe, Magnus." Magnus grabbed Alec by the front of his shirt.
"If I die, you are not allowed to do anything like that. Who would take care of our kids? How could you do that to them?"
"We never had kids in that world," Alec protested.
"Where are Rafe and Max?" Emma whispered to Christina.
"Simon and Isabel are looking after them in New York. Alec checks in every day to see if Max is getting sick, but he seems fine so far," Christina whispered back.
"You are not allowed to hurt yourself under any circumstances," Magnus said, his voice gruff. "Do you understand that, Alexander?"
"I would never,"
Alec said softly, stroking Magnus's cheek.
Magnus clasped Alec's hand against his face.
"Never."
They all looked away, letting Magnus and Alec have their moment in privacy.
"I can see why you clawed at me when I tried to lift you up," Chase said to Emma. His golden eyes were dark with a regret she could only begin to understand. "When you first came through the portal, you were lying on the ground and you were bleeding, and I thought I should carry you to the infirmary, but you clawed at me and screamed like I was a monster."
"I don't remember it," Emma said honestly. "Chase, I know you're a completely different person than him, even if he did look like you. You can't feel bad or responsible for what someone who wasn't you did."
She turned to look at the rest of the table.
"The Thule versions of us aren't really us," she added. "If you think of them as copies of you, it'll drive you crazy."
"That Livy," said Ty. "She isn't mine. She isn't my Livy."
Kit gave him a quick, startled look. The other Blackthorns looked puzzled, but though Julian raised his hand, then lowered it again, as if he meant to protest, no one spoke. Perhaps it was better for Ty to know and to understand that Livy and Thule wasn't the same Livy he'd lost. Still, Emma thought of the letter, now in her pocket, and felt its weight, as if it were made of iron rather than paper and ink.
"It is terrible to believe that there can be such darkness so close to our own world," Mark said in a low voice, "that we evaded this future by such a thin margin."
"It wasn't just chance, Mark," said Helen. "It was because we had Clary, because we had Jace, because we had good people working together to make things right."
"We have good people now," Magnus said. "I have seen good people fall and fail in the past."
"Magnus, you and Alec came here because you thought you might learn how to cure yourself," Helen began.
"Because Katarina told us to," Magnus corrected. "Believe me, I don't just pop out to California for my health under normal circumstances."
"There's nothing normal about any of this," said Emma.
"Please," Helen said,
I know this is an awful story, and we're all upset, but we have to focus.
Wait a second, Magnus said. Does this mean Max is turning into a tiny little demon? Do you know how many preschool waiting lists he's on? He'll never get into Little Red Schoolhouse now.
Aline threw a lamp. No one was expecting it, and the result was quite spectacular. It shattered against one of the dormer windows, and pieces of ceramic flew everywhere. She stood up, dusting off her hands.
Everyone, be quiet and listen to my wife, she said.
Magnus, I know you make jokes when you're scared. I remember Rome, she gave him a surprisingly sweet smile. But we have to focus, she turned to Helen. Go on, honey, you're doing great. She sat back down and folded her hands.
She definitely has a temper, Emma whispered to Christina. I like it.
Remind me to tell you about the frittata, Christina whispered back.
The important thing here, said Helen, is the blight. We didn't realize how important it was, that the blighted areas will become doorways for demons, that our warlocks, she looked at Magnus, will turn into demons. We have to close up these doorways and destroy the blight, and we can't expect any help from Idris.
Why? Said Julian. What's going on? What about Gia?
She's under house arrest in Idris, Aline said quietly. Horace is claiming he caught her meeting with fairies in Brosseland. She and Diana were arrested together, but Diana escaped.
We heard about some of this from Diana, said Clary, after she escaped from Idris. Gwyn brought her here, and she filled us in on what happened to her in Alicante.
Why isn't she still here? Asked Emma. Why did she leave?
Look at this. Mark pushed a piece of paper across the table. Julian and Emma leaned in to read it together. It was a message from the Clave. It said that Diana Rayburn was missing, believed to be under the influence of fairies. All institutes should be on lookout for her own good, and alert the Inquisitor as soon as she was spotted.
It's all nonsense, said Aline. My father says they're afraid of Diana's influence, and didn't want to just name her as a traitor.
They're even lying about what happened to the Inquisitor. They're claiming he lost his arm in a battle with downworlders when they were clearing them out of Idris.
His arm? Echoed Emma, bewildered.
Diana cut the Inquisitor's arm off, said Jace.
Emma upset her glass of water.
She did what?
He was threatening her, said Clary grimly. If Gwyn hadn't been around to get her out of Alicante, I don't know what would have happened.
It was badass, said Jace.
Well, good for her, said Emma.
That definitely calls for a large tapestry one of these days. $50 says the Inquisitor develops a high-tech robot arm that shoots laser beams, said Kit. Everyone looked at him.
It always happens in movies, he explained.
We're shadow hunters, said Julian. We're not high-tech.
He sat back in his chair. Emma could see the bandages under his sleeve when he moved.
You are in the cage.
She shivered. We wanted Diana to stay here with us, but she thought that would make us a target, said Helen. She went to hide out with Gwyn, though she's meant to check back in a few days.
Emma privately hoped Diana and Gwyn were having a fabulous romantic time in a treetop or something. Diana deserved it.
It's awful all over, said Alec. The Downworlder registry is almost complete.
With, of course, some notable exceptions.
He indicated Helen and Aline with a nod.
Quite a few downworlders have managed to escape the registry, moi included, said Magnus. Alec threatened to kill me if I even considered putting my name on some sinister list of the cohort's undesirables.
There was no actual threatening, said Alec, in case anyone was wondering.
Well, all downworlders have been removed from Idris, including the ones who were teachers at Shadowhunter Academy, Mark said.
Rumors are running wild among downworlders of sneak attacks by Shadowhunters. It's like the bad old days before the Accords, Magnus said.
The Iron Sisters have cut off communication with the cohort, said Aline. The Silent Brothers haven't said anything yet, but there was a statement from the Iron Sisters that they didn't accept Horus's authority. Horus is furious and keeps hounding them, especially because they have the shards of the Mortal Sword.
There's more, said Christina. Diego, Divya, and Rayan have been arrested. along with many others.
Her voice was strained.
They're throwing everyone in prison who disagrees with them, said Aline. In a small voice, Drew said, Jaime went to try to save his brother, but he wound up in prison too. We heard about it from Patrick Penhollow.
Emma looked at Christina, who was biting her lip unhappily.
Since we have no help from the Clave, and perhaps active opposition, what do we do? Julian said. We do what Tessa told you to do in Thule, said Magnus. I trust Tessa. I always have. Just as you trusted Livy when you found her in Thule. They might not be exact copies of us, these alternate selves, but they're not so different, either.
So, we pour some of the water of Lake Lynn on the blighted areas, and save some to cure the warlocks, said Helen. The big problem being, how do we get to Lake Lynn, past the cohort guards who are all over Idris? And then, how do we get back out?
I will do it, Magnus said, sitting up.
The blanket fell loosely around him.
I will...
No, Alex said sharply. You are not risking yourself, Magnus, not in your condition.
Magnus opened his mouth to object. Clary leaned across the table, her eyes entreating.
Please, Magnus. You've helped us so many times. Let us help you.
How?
Magnus said gruffly.
Jace rose to his feet. We'll go to Idris. Clary stood up too. She only reached to Jace's bicep, but her determination was clear.
I can create portals. We can't get into Alicante, but we don't need to. Just into Idris. We'll go to Lake Lynn, then Brosalind, and get back as fast as we can. We'll go as many times as we need to so we can get enough water.
There are guards patrolling all over Idris, said Helen. You'll need to be armed and prepared.
Then we'll start getting armed now, Jace winked at Magnus. Prepare to be helped, Warlock, whether you like it or not.
Not,
Magnus grumbled, subsiding into his blanket, but he was smiling. And the look Alec gave Jace and Clary was more eloquent than any speech.
Wait,
Aline held up a hand. She was shuffling through a pile of papers on the table.
I've got the schedules of the Idris patrols here.
They're sweeping different locations in Idris to make sure they're clear of downworlders. She spoke the words with distaste.
They're going to Lake Lynn today and tonight, she looked up. You can't go now.
We can deal with some guards, Jace said.
No, said Magnus. It's too dangerous. You can deal with 10 guards or 20, but it's going to be 50 or 100.
100, said Helen, looking over Aline's shoulder. At least.
I won't let you take the risk, Magnus said. I'll wear myself out using my magic to drag you back.
Magnus!
Clary sounded appalled.
What does the schedule say? Asked Julian. When can they go?
Tomorrow, dawn, said Aline. They should have dispersed by then.
She set the papers down.
I know it's not ideal, but it's what we need to do. We'll spend a day setting up and getting you ready, making sure everything goes without a hitch.
There was a general hubbub as everyone offered to pitch in, claiming one responsibility or another. Emma and Christina were going to talk to Katerina about the possible cure. Mark and Julian were going to check maps of Brosalind to find where the areas of blight were. Clary and Jace were going to gather up their gear and weapons, and Helen and Aline were going to try to find out exactly when the patrol would be moving from Lake Lynn to Brosalind Forest. Ty and Kit, meanwhile, would start putting together lists of local warlocks who might need lake water when it was retrieved. As everyone gathered up the things, Ty went over to the corner where Tavi was playing and knelt down to hand him a small train. Amid the confusion, Emma slipped after him. He appeared to have offered the train as a trade for his headphones.
Ty, Emma said, crouching down.
Tavi was busy turning trains upside down.
I have to give you something.
What kind of thing? He sounded puzzled. She hesitated, then drew the envelope from her pocket.
It's a letter, she said, from the Livy in the other dimension, in Thule. We told her about you, and she wanted to write something for you to read. I haven't looked at it, she said. It's just for you.
Ty stood up. He was graceful as a hollow-boned bird and looked as light and fragile.
She's not my Libby.
I know, Emma said.
She couldn't stop looking at his hands. His knuckles were raw and red. Her Julian would have noticed that already and been moving heaven and earth to find out what happened.
And you don't have to read it, but it's yours. And I think you should have it.
She paused. After all, it did come from a pretty long way away. A look passed over his face that she couldn't quite decipher. He took it, though, and folded it up inside his jacket.
Thanks,
he said, and went across the room to join Kit in the Downworlders Warlocks section, where Kit was struggling with several heavy books.
Don't,
she heard Christina say, and looked around in surprise. She didn't see Christina anywhere, but that had definitely been her voice. She glanced around. Tavi was absorbed in his train, and everyone else was hurrying to and fro.
Kieran, I know you are worried, but you didn't speak a word through the whole meeting.
Oh, dear, Emma thought. She realized that Christina's voice was coming from the other side of a bookcase, and that Christina and Kieran had no idea she was there. If she tried to leave, though, they'd know immediately. These are shadow hunts of politics, Kieran said. There was something in his voice, Emma thought, something different.
It is not something I understand. It is not my fight.
It is your fight, Christina replied.
Emma had rarely heard her speak with such intensity.
You fight for what you love. We all do,
she hesitated.
Your heart is hidden, but I know you love Mark. I know you love Fairy. Fight for that, Kieran.
Christina,
Kieran began, but Christina had already hurried away. She emerged from the other side of the bookcase and saw Emma immediately. She looked surprised and guilty and hurried quickly from the room. Kieran started to follow but stopped halfway across the room and leaned his hands on the table, bowing his head. Emma started to edge out from behind the bookcase, hoping to creep to the door unnoticed. She should have known better than to try to sneak by a fairy, she realized ruefully. Kieran looked up at the first tap of his shoes on the polished wood floor. Emma?
Just going, she said. Don't mind me.
But I wish to mind you, he said, coming out from behind the table. He was all graceful angles, pallor and darkness. Emma supposed she could see what drew Christina to him.
I have had cause to understand how much pain I brought to you when you were whipped by Irloth, he said. I never desired that outcome, yet I did cause it. I cannot change that, but I can offer my sincere regrets and swear myself to accomplish any task that you set me.
Emma had not been expecting this. Any task? Like you'd be willing to learn to hula dance?
Is that a torture of your people? Said Kieran.
Then yes, I would submit to it for your sake. Sadly, Emma put aside the thought of Kieran in a grass skirt.
You fought on our side in the Unseelie Court, she said. You brought Mark and Christina back safely with you, and they mean everything to me. You've proven yourself a true friend, Kieran. You have my forgiveness, and you don't need to do anything else to earn it. He actually blushed, a touch of color warming his pale cheeks.
That is not what a fairy would say.
It's what I would say, Emma said cheerfully.
Kieran strode toward the door, where he paused and turned to her. I have known how Christina loves you, and I understand why. If you had been born a fairy, you would be a great knight of the court. You are one of the bravest people I have ever known. Emma stammered a thank you, but Kieran was already gone, like a shadow melting into the forest.
She stared after him, realizing what it was she'd heard earlier in the way he said Christina's name, as if it were a torment that he adored. She had never heard him speak any name but Mark's that way before.
Is there anything you want to talk to me about? Magnus asked.